Welcome back, everyone, to the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo and Joe Resinello.
Oh, you're exactly right, Joe.
We work for the man upstairs, as you do.
You're setting me up quite well. You just gave me an alley-oop.
The greatest revolutionary act you can commit right now is to open your mouth and speak the truth.
Whether you're an academic or you're a regular guy, we have to be fearless.
And once more, dear brothers and sisters, let us go into the breach. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo, as always, joined by Joe Resinello. And once more, dear brothers and sisters, let us go into the breach on the Veritas Catholic Radio Network, 1350 on your AM dial, 103.9 on your FM dial, spreading the truth of the Catholic faith to the New York City metropolitan area. Two things: download the app, make sure you share it with your friends. This way you'll have access to all of our station's content, not just the front line with Joe and Joe. And if you like what Joe and I do, we're all over social media, really trying to build up Rumble. So I would suggest going to Rumble, Frontline TV, Newsflash, and anywhere else you see us, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We're growing nicely. We'd like to continue to grow. Joe and I think we have something to say. And we're getting a lot of good feedback from people who are saying, hey, you guys got something to say. So we're very, very blessed in that regard. And we appreciate all your help. Now, today, we are very pleased and honored to be joined by Dan Schneider. And we're going to be discussing his new book, The Liber Christo Method, A Field Manual for Spiritual Combat. Now, right away, Joe Resinello, you talk about spiritual combat. You're going into the breach because, unfortunately, again, I'm not trying to sound judgmental, but some Catholics don't take spiritual combat seriously. Well, we do, and the church does. And that's why we have Dan here. Please, guys out there listening to us, we always say support our Catholic publisher. So not only do we encourage you to buy the book, we also encourage you to go to Tan Books, the publisher, to buy it. And I'm sure Dan will tell us where there's some other places that you could purchase the book. So just a quick bio on Dan. He is an adjunct professor of theology at Franciscan University in Steubenville. He's been involved in teaching and evangelization in the Catholic Church for 20 years, a former amateur boxer, U.S. Army helicopter pilot, and Gulf War veteran. Dan has also worked for many years in the Catholic apostolate of deliverance and exorcism, both at the diocesan level and as a founding member of Liber Christo, a movement in conjunction with Father Chad Ripperger, SMD, which provides tools and resources for priests and laity working in the apostolate of exorcism. Dan Schneider, welcome to the front line with Joe and Joe, brother.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here. Anytime, all of us are called to be on the front line, so I appreciate what you guys are doing. It's outstanding.
We appreciate that. Absolutely. And yeah. Joe Resinello, I'm going to hand it over to you. We're going to have a great conversation.
Dan, we always begin with a prayer to Our Lady. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who sought your help or sought your intercession was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, we fly unto you, a virgin of virgins, our mother. To you we come, for you we stand, sinful and sorrowful. O mother of the word incarnate, despise not our petitions, but in your clemency hear and answer us, amen. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Well, Dan has a show, I want everyone to know, on Virgin Most Powerful. I believe it's Wednesdays, am I correct, Dan?
Wednesdays, yes. Wednesday, War College with Jesse Romero.
It's phenomenal. I highly recommend that you guys tune into it. They talk about a lot of great things. And as Joe Pasillo said, they have a new, basically it's like a movement of the Holy Spirit. It's something new. It's Liber Christo ministry. It really isn't new, to be truthful with you. It's Catholic as far as it goes back, but they're talking about things that a lot of people aren't talking about that they should be. Tell us about your movement. Tell us about what you guys do, how it started.
Yeah, the Liber Christo is it's kind of a crassus of Latin to say the free man, freedom in, through, by Christ, finding your freedom in Christ. This was something that I was involved with at the very beginning with Kyle Clement, who was Father Ripperger's longtime assistant, right-hand man, case manager, case facilitator for Father Ripperger and the Society of the Most Sorrowful Mother. And so Kyle developed a protocol with Father Ripperger, and we started implementing it through Liber Christo with various teams and dioceses throughout the country. I just came back from Germany, and we've got teams over there and teams in New Zealand and other places as well. So it's a way to manage, for us, Liber Christo is a way of managing cases. It brings some objectivity, but ultimately it brings to bear the weight of tradition and brings the the whole deliverance ministry of exorcism, deliverance back. We're trying to bring it back into like norms, if you will, to get it firmly rooted in what the church has taught and practiced over the centuries.
Yeah, Schneider, let me ask you this. I don't want to come across as judgmental, but the fact is this. Jesus Christ, who we as Catholics say that we believe is the second person of the Blessed Trinity and rose from the dead, acknowledged the existence of the devil, was tempted by him in the desert. Okay, it's scriptural, it's tradition, it goes back to the Old Testament. Okay, why is it that some people, even clergy, you mention the devil and they're kind of like, well, that was kind of like the devil doesn't really exist. He's just the way we embody evil or we imagine evil. Well, Jesus Christ said he exists. Now, I don't mean to get a little animated about this, Dan, but the fact is there's a heaven, there's a hell, and there's an entity that wants us in hell, and that's the devil, and Jesus said he exists. Please talk about the sad reality that many Catholics don't acknowledge that.
Yeah, no, Father Ripperger was speaking with a bishop. He didn't disclose the diocese, but the bishop said to Father Ripperger, you know, I believe that the devil exists. I just don't think he exists in my diocese. And many fathers and head of households are saying, I believe the devil exists. I just don't think he's working against my family or my business or my apostolate or my radio program. He's constantly at work. The enemy that we're fighting it's an ancient enemy. And so the ancient weapons are best. Jesus Christ starts off in the book of Mark, for example, he starts off doing three things, preaching, healing, and driving out demons. And those three things, what we call the tria munera of the priesthood, of the ordained priest, this is what a munus is a duty, a responsibility. This he hands on to the church and the successor apostles to do. And so, and part of the threefold thing to rule, to preach, to sanctify, and to rule, those are the threefold munera of the priesthood. And the priests are in persona Christi. And the early church got this instinctively. St. Paul, of course, talks about the Romans 6 and the weapons of warfare to describe that we fight against an ancient enemy, a cosmic energy of powers and principalities, not with flesh and blood. Going into the second century, mid second century, Tertullian, Irenaeus, and several other fathers in the East and the West, Chrysostom, Justin Martyr, they talk about the cross. Not as there's no sugary, skinny jean, eco-friendly Jesus. The Jesus of the early church was a warrior, and the cross was a weapon. It was a tropion, and I put this into the early part of the book for this very reason, because we live in an overly feminized society, and we don't want to hear about combat. Oh, no, we don't want to talk about that. That's taboo. That's mean. That goes against the gospel of love. Well, guess what? God is a warrior. That's what it says in the scriptures. And that warrior mentality carries into the early church, into the New Testament. St. Paul says, bear your share of the burden of the gospel as a good soldier for Christ. And so they saw Christ, even Augustine. I quoted Augustine in the book. St. Augustine, doctor of the church, said, as David cut off the head of Goliath with the sword of Goliath, so Jesus, our David, cuts the head off of the devil and defeats the enemy and his demons with the cross. So the cross is a tropion. In antiquity, in ancient battles, at the site, when two formed armies come together, there's always one spot in battle that the enemy turns and flees. And once that happens, it's the slaughter is on, victory is assured. That spot of turning, where we get the word trophy, is tropion, where they turned, and that marks the spot. I saw that spot in Iraq. I was with the 1st Cav Division Cavalry. I saw this in real time, and now I'm seeing it in spiritual battle. And this is what the early church fathers saw. Christ brought about the victory over the devil, and they would mark that spot with a T for the word for the tropion, and they would drape over it the weapons, the armaments of the enemy. The English translation is war memorial. So the war memorial marks the spot of victory. This is the language of the ancient church, that Christ is a warrior, and he defeats a legion of enemy, and he wants us to do the same. But we want to do it safely within the teachings of the church.
Absolutely. Dan Schneider is joining us here at the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo, Joe Rossinello. We're in the breach, the Libra Cristo method, a field manual for spiritual combat. Quick comment, Dan, and I'm going to hand it over to Joe. Catechism of the Catholic Church 409 says that history is one of a dour combat. Combat. The church uses the word combat. All right. When you think the devil doesn't come into your house, all right, let's give you the benefit of the doubt, but you still have to go outside of your house. He's all over the place. Okay. And I agree with you. He's constantly working. People need to fear, a healthy fear, not to be obsessed with it, but fear, because what happens when you look at what we're going through nowadays, Dan Schneider, what happens when your kid goes to school, if they're in public school and your 11-year-old boy is being told by his teacher he could be a girl? That's the devil at work. Okay. That's not just some alternate ideology. That's the devil at work that's lying to children. And that's just one example. So I don't get this idea that you're so safe in your home, even though obviously we know we're always under attack. But what about going outdoors? Quick comment on that, Dan. And then I'm going to hand it over to Joe.
Yeah, no, I just recently watched Nefarious. I kind of get tired of writing and talking and thinking about the devil and working cases and watching the devil at work and spiritisms and watching all the nasty stuff that the devil does. So I don't really want to spend my free time watching a movie that I know is that I've heard good things about it. But a lot of people keep asking me. So I watched a movie this weekend. It was an outstanding movie. The men that produced the movie said they told Jesse Romero that they watched hours of Father Ripperger videos. I see a lot of Father's, some of his talks and some of his teachings in there and experiences. There was one scene, there was really only one scene in the whole movie for the most part, but there was one dialogue where the atheist ironically named James Martin. I thought that was kind of clever on behalf of the authors. So James Martin, a psychiatrist, says, you know, the demon says to him, you guys are losing. You guys are losing the battle. And he's meaning humanity. He doesn't respect this guy's intellect whatsoever. You guys are losing. And the atheist says, I didn't realize that we were at war. And the demon says, and that's why you're losing. Very clever, very clever, very, very clever a dialogue. And that's why we're losing, because most Christians don't understand that we are at war. In fact, the quote from the Catechism is also in the introduction of my book. All of human history, there wasn't a point where the battle began. It wasn't like, 500 BC, things got rough, or before the Exodus. No, all of human history is one of dour combat with the forces of evil. That is our history. Going back to the garden, we were born into combat. It doesn't mean we look for the demon under every rock, but you got to have them in the military. We said you have your head on a swivel. You're constantly watching. You're constantly aware. You're not obsessed with the devil. In fact, what we say is the demon is tertiary in Catholic liberation. He's number three. Number one is a focus on Jesus Christ. Number two is focusing on what are the obstacles that prevent me from growing in my union, from deepening my relationship and growing in holiness with Jesus Christ. So focus on Christ, focus on what's blocking, what are the vices, what are the defects, where do I need to grow in virtue? How do I need to open up the lines of grace sacramentally? Grace flows into the world in seven principal ways. Those are the seven sacraments of the Catholic Church. So this book tries to focus people on opening the lines of grace to their soul. And then only number three, do we get into what is the devil doing? And so you know, this really is what my wife called smash mouth Catholicism. This is just ground and pound Catholicism. I was laying in bed one night during COVID, you know, and of course the world was going to end. We're all going to die a horrible death and all the stuff at all the lies that the media put out. And we're laying in bed and I hand my wife a piece of paper and she says, "What's this?" And I said, "Well, we're going to start praying this. This is the litany of saints to be prayed during times of plague." And she looked at me and she just smiled and she said, "You, my friend, practice smash mouth Catholicism." Spiritual warfare, that's all it is. It's smash mouth, man. It's just big on big. You run it until they stop it. It's my guy versus your guy. You just ground and pound it. This is spiritual warfare. There's no secrets discovered after 9-10 years now working in this apostolate against my will. Okay. I would much rather be smoking a pipe and throwing the frisbee, in the quad. But Our Lady calls us, each one of us, to stand in the breach, just like you guys have in your show. That's absolutely true.
Thanks for that, Dan Schneider. Joe Arsenello.
I want to just comment on something you said, then I want to bring it to the bishops. I love the fact that you bring up a prayer to your wife. Recently, we just did the novena for the Assumption on my, provocation to do it. That's the husband's job. You see something, something that's problematic, not just in your home, but potentially in the culture, and you have to address it. Too many men don't do that, and I commend you for that. But I want to talk a bit about the bishops for a second. Bishops wear, they have a crozier. It's a fancy word. It's a stick. I'm from New Jersey. I call it a stick. They have to swing it. Why? to keep the wolves away. Well, that's the man's job in the home. We talked to Dr. Ray Guarendi. He talked about the spirit of the world creeping like a mist under your door. And that's very true. The devil is smart. He's smart and he knows our weaknesses. He knows where to creep into the home. And it's the man's job to be vigilant. Vigilant. Now, a bishop has a bigger job than me. I have five children and I have a house. How does the devil come in my house? Through social media, the television, through conversation, through lust. There's a lot of ways the devil can creep in. Talk about that. Talk about the man's role. Talk about the reality of the devil, not just in our homes, but also in the church. The bishop's job, he's got the crozier. He's got to swing the stick.
Absolutely. The crozier in biblical symbolism, the staff, is a symbol of authority. And so Moses had a staff, right? It's also a weapon, as David carried his similar staff. The crozier is just basically a shepherd's staff. The staff was both offensive and defensive. It was something that could be, it could use to pull the sheep back. It could use to drive out predators. It used to pull the sheep out of a stuck place. So the authority structure has two ends. And God has established authority, not my charism. It isn't who's the smartest. It isn't who's got their PhD. It isn't who's the best looking or the most articulate. The authority structure is very, very clearly established through office. St. Ambrose recently I was reading, and I do the office of readings every morning. St. Ambrose was talking in his catechesis to catechumenates about preparing for baptism. He says, when you look at the priest, do not judge him by his outward appearance. Look at his office. He is Peter, he is Paul. More than that, he is Elijah who calls down fire from heaven because of his office. So authority flows through office. And that has established your relationship to Christ in the church. And even in civil, natural law, there's an office associated with each of what we do in our own private temporal means or temporal work. So to provide and to protect, that's the two ends. The temptation is always to if you're under authority, to usurp authority. And if you're in authority, not to engage. And so the temptation for a bishop is not to engage into assert his authority. And we're talking about a spiritual authority. We're not talking about, hey, woman, I want you to wear this dress. Hey, woman, you know, no, we're talking about first engagement. When St. Paul in Ephesians chapter 5 says, women, be subordinate to your husband, that word upotasso is a military word. That's a word to describe military rank structure, to be ordered under. Even more so, that word means to be under the protection of. That man, the head of household, the priest, pastor, the bishop, he has a shield and a sword, the offensive and the defensive weapon. He takes his flock, whether the flock is a wife and five kids or the flock is those entrusted to his pastoral care, and he puts them behind him and he holds that shield up and said, for you to get to them, you got to go through me. That's how, and that's the imagery that St. Paul is using to the authority structure. And an image that I showed, we were training some of our teams last year, and I was trying to explain the diabolic mentality and understanding. So I decided to show him a video from Vietnam. This is a CBS reel with Walter Cronkite. And he's showing a video of how sappers worked. In Vietnam, the Viet Cong had what they called sappers. They were special op guys. They were master engineers. They could breach the perimeter. We would set up what we called the wire. And I talk about the wire as the interior perimeter, but the perimeter is a string of wires that connected Claymore mines, bad guys outside, good guys inside. The enemy is constant. The sappers would crawl under. They would try to subvert. They would try to disable. They would even go in and turn the Claymore mines backwards. I have a good friend of mine, a Vietnam veteran, highly decorated Vietnam veteran, still alive. On his first night in Vietnam, a sapper got in, turned the Claymore the opposite way, made noise. They blew it. They blew the Claymore, killed about 10 of their own guys. The enemy works the same way. If we see this in physical combat, war is war, whether it's spiritual or whether it's physical. So a bishop's got to be aware that the demon is constantly working. It's constantly working at the parish. He's working against the diocese. He's a sapper. He's an infiltrator. You have to be aware of that. And so that's why it's important. And when the authority structure allows it in, For example, if a father is looking at pornography, he's just taken his shield, he's placed it in the corner, he's taken his sword and all his armaments, and his family is no longer protected because the authority structure is to provide and to protect. So the enemy is going to try to take out you first, and then your wife and your children are vulnerable.
Matt Snyder is joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe. Please go out and buy his book, The Libra Cristo Method, a field manual for spiritual combat, that's available at Tan Books. Dan, real quick, where else is the book available?
Tan might be temporarily sold out, but I've heard that Amazon has a few copies that you can get it there, and we'll get another shipment coming underway. Sold out quicker than they anticipated.
All right. So if our audience has to buy it at Amazon, go.
Yeah,
buy
you
got
to go to the Dark Lord. At the last minute, they bought up everything. It was kind of interesting for months. It sold out in about 6 or 7 weeks. But for the first 6 weeks, Amazon had none, and all of a sudden, Amazon has them all. So I don't know. I don't know how their metrics work.
They're like the devil. They got their tentacles and everything. Anyway, yeah. Dan Snyder, let me ask you this. You mentioned earlier about the devil's an ancient foe, and you started to talk about ancient weapons. What are some of those weapons? Expand on that for our audience.
I run these out through the book, and I opened up with a quote from Father Amorth, and I want to read it so I'm precise on what I say. I also edited for Tan another book recently. I did a developmental editing for a book on the life of Father Amorth, Father Gabriel Amorth, who really reestablished in the modern times exorcism, the whole practice. Up until him, it was largely ignored. Most bishops didn't believe in it. Most theologians, it was silly, as you said earlier. But here's what he said. There's always a strong temptation for charismatics, sensitives, and exorcists of finding the quickest way to heal while going outside of the common sacred means to obtain grace. Unwittingly, he says, those who try to find quick solutions outside of the ordinary channels of grace unwittingly fall into the trap of superstition or magic. So you got to be careful that we don't fall into a white magic, if you will, of trying to find the secret prayer. What are the ordinary ways of grace of doing combat? The sacraments, prayer, and a spirituality of suffering. What do we share in common with the priesthood, our universal priesthood, with the sacerdotal priesthood, of the hierarchical priesthood of the ordained? A commonality of suffering, of sacrifice. And so the book, I gradually walk you through first praying, how to pray vocal prayers, establishing your life order to prayer, because the demon responds to the imposition of order as much as to the prayers themselves. So having to establish a prayer life of order and beginning with just simple vocal prayers, and then introducing how to do a little bit of meditation, praying the rosary and Lectio Divina. That is one way, because it gives us custody of the imagination and interior a constancy that is absolutely critical for combat. When I flew into combat, I might've been nervous on the inside. Only a fool would not be, but I wasn't physically shaking, because you'd see my aircraft doing this. You had to stay calm when you engage in combat, and you have to have constancy. And that comes over time through rote practice and developing meditation and custody of the mind or the imagination. And then learning to sacrifice, learning to suffer, to offer your suffering up. This is one of the marks of modernism, is a denial of the value, the redemptive value of suffering. Something that our mothers and grandmothers would say to us, that old phrase that we heard as kids, when you get cut from the baseball team, your boyfriend breaks up with you, you don't get into the school you want. What did they say? Offer it up. Mm-hmm. A very simple piece of wisdom from the sensus fidelium, that is redemptive value of suffering united with Christ. And then ultimately grace flows through sacrament. So removing the obstacles to grace and growing in holiness of thought, word, and deed. These are the ancient weapons. This is how we beat the enemy. And there's other nuances to it, including the authority structure. But these are the areas. The enemy's going to find a soft target. He's going to go. If you watch the Discovery Channel, you'll see the lion. And he sees the wildebeest. And that lion could take out any one of them. There's the alpha up there. You know, he's kind of cool. He's got the bigger beard. He's kind of rocking some big arms. Maybe he's got a few cool tats. He's the alpha wildebeest. That he doesn't have a chance against the lion. And he doesn't go against him. He goes after the one in the back that's limping, that's wounded, that's separated from the flock. He's going to find the vulnerable one and go after those vulnerabilities. So how do we do that? We have to fight back by shoring up those vulnerabilities, staying in the herd, and learning to fight together and with the ancient weapons of prayer, sacrifice, and sacrament.
Awesome. Dan Schneider is joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe. Joe Rossinello, we have a few minutes before the break, so where do you want to go?
Let's talk about the spiritual battles of our day. I want to throw two. They're basic, and then I'm sure you'll have much more detail than the two examples that I put forth. Fear. I think this is something that men, you mentioned going into battle flying in a helicopter. I mean, this is not something most people experience, but I do think people experience fear. They don't want to, I use this example all the time, they don't want to get disinvited to the barbecue because of the positions they take, because of how they live their life. There's a fear. The way you comport yourself at work, the way you live as a Catholic man, and people cave to it. Men cave to it. We can't do that. Also, doubt. We cannot have doubt in Jesus Christ. It's something I pray about every morning when I pray, what's it called, the Divine Mercy Chaplet. I think about Christ. He could do anything. He's God. Anything. He could heal anybody. He could do anything. And we should not doubt his word. Take him at his word. If he says that, you do it. Just like he told the apostles, throw the net over the other side. They didn't say, listen, you're a carpenter, I'm a fisherman. No. Know what they said? You said so, so I'm doing it. That's the doubt. We cannot doubt God's word. But also talk about the other spiritual battles. And please comment on what I just said regarding fear and doubt, because I think that's right in front of everyone's face.
Yeah, no, I think beyond the fear, there's either one lady who had a child that was radically wounded, traumatized, and they started the protocol and found liberation very quickly. And she said, she made a comment. She said, we were so worried. All I did was pray. And I said, well, no, you didn't. She said, what do you mean? I said, either you worried or you prayed, because your worry mitigates your prayer. You know, out here in the Southwest, they hunt coyotes, right? Or when I was, for an example, we hunt coyotes because they kill the livestock population, right? So, and they kill the big game population. So they're allowed, it's legal to hunt coyotes who are predators. And how do they do that? They project the sound. The hunters will project the sound of a dying rabbit or a wounded puppy or a wounded chicken, and that sound attracts the diabolic, or attracts the coyote, and they run right into the hunter's camp and get killed. It's no different than when I was a helicopter. We didn't have GPS back then. It was, hey, if you want me to come in and bring you support or get you guys out of there, you're gonna have to pop purple smoke. So they pop smoke. I see it. I said, Roger, you know, Roger, Cobra 1, 2, 3, 4. I see purple smoke inbound. Boom. We see them, but the enemy sees them as well. We hear the coyote screaming, but that's projecting into the cosmos. The cry of the wounded rabbit, the cry of the wounded puppy is into the cosmos. When we're filled with fear, our prayer is a projection of vulnerability and woundedness. So learning to pray from a position of calm, right? And calm and trust in God, and learning emotional constancy is very critical. When you're in battle, things are going to happen. Bad things happened when I was in battle, when I was in combat. We have to fight, oh, forget it and drive on, right? You got to get to that point. Wetsu, we eat this stuff up, right? This is right out of Ranger 101. Charlie Mike, continue the mission. So these terms we use in physical combat, we have to apply them to spiritual combat. And part of that is, it isn't necessarily fear on the front. I use Rogers Rangers and the Ranger Handbook is just as part of the narrative of the book. And on the front of the handbook, the Ranger Handbook, it says, not for the faint-hearted, and the spiritual battle isn't for the faint-hearted. So you got to be strong interiorly, and not be afraid, and not be afraid.
Dan, I'm sorry to cut you off. Let's take a quick break. Okay, we're coming up on a break, and we're going to pick this up right afterwards. So we're with Dan Schneider. We're discussing his new book, The Liber Christo Method, a field manual for spiritual combat that's available at Tan Books. You also can buy it at Amazon. This is a great conversation, an important conversation. So we'll be right back with Dan Schneider.
Catholic radio works, and now we have it here in Connecticut and New York. It's been seen around the country that there's no better tool for evangelization. Where there's Catholic radio, the folks who listen deepen their faith, families are strengthened, parishes and communities flourish. So, let people know you're listening to Veritas, tell your friends to tune in, and let's make an impact here for Jesus and His Church. This is Steve Lee for Veritas Catholic Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo and Joe Resinello, Way in Breach. Dan Schneider, we're discussing his new book, The Libra Cristo Method, a field manual for spiritual combat that's available at Can Books. You're listening to us on the Veritas Catholic Radio Network. Dan, before the break, you were talking about fear. I know Joe asked you also about, so I'm going to just hand the floor right back to you.
Yeah, yeah. There's that old anagram, false evidence appearing real, right? I mean, the demon's going to project false evidence to you. It's going to seem real to you. You got to push back. You got to battle back on that fear. You got to step into the breach of the fear with faith and confidence. And how do you do that? You have to do that knowing the rules of engagement. Another aspect from the military is that we had SEER training, which was survival, escape, resistance, and evasion. And the purpose of survival, escape, resistance, and evasion that pilots learned and specialists learned was to come back, what they say, to return with honor. Return with honor. And what does that mean? No compromise with the enemy. There can be no compromise with the gospel, right? And so, you know, you mentioned the barbecue, you know, not being too concerned. And many, many people that I've worked with our cases that have that similar fear. And part of that fear flows from really a vanity. And if you think through it, vanity is when we desire the approval of creator over the creator. That's compromising with the enemy. That's compromising the gospel. We have to seek God's approval. It doesn't give you the right to be a jerk, right? To be a know-it-all, to offend everyone, right? We're going to move in subtly. In the military, we call nap of the earth flight, where you're three lines, you're running 10 feet off the deck, 150 miles an hour, but you're keeping a low profile. You engage when you need to, but nonetheless, turn with honor, return to our heavenly home with honor. Jesus is going to say to us, how did you do in your SEER mission? How did you do behind enemy lines? Because let's face it, we're behind enemy lines. You know, to be post-Christian, which we are now, I think objectively we could say that, is to be pagan. Nature and supernature, or preternature, I should say, abhor a vacuum. And so we're now living in a time where we see a resurgence of pre-Christian forms, which we would call paganism, right? And the psalmist says in Psalm 96:5, the gods of the Gentiles, the gods of the pagans are demons. So we're seeing a resurgence of these things in our culture. Just watch this whole halftime show and think maybe old Dano's right. It's getting more and more bizarre. It's getting more and more diabolic. Our Hollywood, what's coming out of Hollywood, is just becoming bizarre, overtly pagan and satanic. The clothing line for children put out by a homosexual Satanist that Target put out. I mean, we're seeing a resurgence of paganism that we have to really understand that we're in the spiritual combat, as you say. They're just coming back and they're open about it.
One thing I'm going to comment, I'm going to hand it over to Joe. I think that's why what you're doing is important. Joe and I are, you know, we're spokes in a wheel, but we're happy to be so, you know, and there's a lot of others out there. I think the key to what you're saying, Dan, is in this battle, stop defending. Start going on offense. Joe and I say it at the show all the time. You see Sam Smith in a satanic ritual at the Grammys, don't let the media mock you and say, oh, you're calling it a satanic ritual. Because it is. That's right. Why. You're mad because Madonna kind of does this, that, and the other thing with her imagery. That's right, because it's blasphemy. That's right. We need to call it out, as you said. So when it's at the Super Bowl or it's at the Grammys, more importantly, you said about protecting your family. Okay. I probably, because I have this hope that the New York Jets might go to the Super Bowl this year.
And me, the Browns. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, hope. Eternal hope, right? Yeah.
There's always that hope. If Aaron Rodgers takes me to the Super Bowl, okay, I'll probably watch. But I can't tell you the last time I watched the halftime show. That's my little two cents. Joe Resinello, where do you want to go?
Talk about the exorcisms that you have seen, because you're involved with them. Because again, I don't think a lot of Catholics even put any like credence in that. They may even think that that's just in the movies, but that is real because the devil is real. And we've had Jesse on the show and he's talked about it. We've also interviewed a number of exorcists. Some of those stories are just unbelievable. What are some things that you have seen?
Yeah. It's nonsensical, the things that we've seen, the things that I've seen, the thing, you know, I began in the business, working on a team, and also doing my doctoral research. So I had this super rational doctoral, biblical studies, very rigorous. And then we would go to these prayer sessions to just see the most crazy things. People, crawling up the walls. People, as soon as the priest raises his hand in prayer, seeing somebody slide across a room 30 feet and slam against the wall. But the most beautiful thing, and we've seen all sorts of crazy stuff, the stuff that would make that Hollywood won't do, you know, because Father Ripperger asked a Hollywood producer, why don't you really show what exorcisms are really like? And he says, we think that would be too frightening for people, is what the guy told Father Ripperger. So the things that you see are phenomenal, but the beauty you see, it's kind of like being working in this particular ministry. It's more like being you, it's like cosmic dirty jobs, you know. It's, and so you're standing at the end of a sewage pipe. This is one of the images that Father Ripperger has used, and I agree with that. You're just standing at the end of a sewage pipe, but every once in a while, somebody upstairs drops their wedding ring, and you see this diamond ring comes through here. So to see the beauty, to hear the demons say, I just heard this 2 weeks ago. Every time you invoke the Virgin Mary, she comes, she places her mantle around you. And to see the palpable presence and power of the Virgin Mary, the Queen of Battle, to see the angels and saints at work, it's far superior and far more exciting than anything that the devil might do to try to scare us off or any parlor tricks that he does. And he has plenty of those.
Yeah, and can I ask you a question? It may seem a little challenging, but you tell me. Dan Snyder joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe. What if someone was to ask, God could do anything. God is all powerful. Why does God need the exorcist? Why doesn't God just tell the devil, get out? Just like Jesus did in the New Testament when he told him, he says, you know, he told Satan, leave him with the one guy who was naked and he was, you know, people thought he was crazy, whatever. Why doesn't God just do it? Again, I know that I can hear somebody asking that. And I'd love to know what your thoughts are on that. Why does he expect the exorcist or you, or why does he expect us to do it?
Expands it in the book Dominion. I think he gives 21 reasons. But Bonaventure says that God allows the demon to afflict us, to educate us, right? To teach us spiritual combat, to humiliate the demon, right? To stop his work. Because if the demon is allowed to work in your family, let's say your family is struggling with a spirit of impurity, and God allows that struggle not only to for you to overcome it, but also to defeat that spirit in your family, to glorify God, number three, and to punish sin. So why was this man born blind in John chapter 9? Was it because he sinned or his parents sinned? Neither, so that God may be glorified. So God allows the diabolic, he allows the demon to afflict us to bring glory to him. Because when we defeat him, he's no longer working here on earth. He educates us so we can educate our family. He punishes sin for lets the demon become the instrument of his punishment, of our punishment and the temporal effects of our sin. But ultimately it's to bring glory to God. But for many reasons that God allows it, because this is part of who we are as fallen human creatures, having to deal with angels that came from heaven and their rebellion were thrown to the earth. We were created for heaven and they were created in heaven and thrown to the earth. And we have to sit and battle this out together for until Christ comes again, until our death anyway.
So Rasinello, real quick, I wanted just to follow up on that, if you don't mind. Dan, you mentioned about why was this man born blind? Okay. And I know I've asked this question before, or at least in my own head. Okay. When I always, maybe it's not a joke, but I can usually kind of joke about it to my wife. I said, I think somebody at some point in the Pasillo family, you know, lineage going back a couple hundred years did something really bad because our family is really screwed up. Okay. And I'm not judging my family because if I say that about them, I'm saying that about me too. Okay. How much weight do you give generational curses that where we could actually, unfortunately, be afflicted by something that one of our ancestors has done? And unfortunately, that carries on and that chain needs to be broken. What does the church say about that? What do you say about that, Dan?
Yeah, it's a topic that's been not really fleshed out. And there's a lot of misconceptions about it. I've got a small section of it in my book. And I'm working on a follow-up book with Tan, and I'm going to cover this. And I'm beginning with not just Legion, but after Legion, there's two exorcism scenes in all the Gospels, but I'm going to focus on Mark. After the battle with Legion, the Gerasene demoniac, Jesus has a Syrophoenician woman whose daughter, and she doesn't say it's my daughter, it's my little daughter, right? And Mark says it's not the wife, it's not the woman. So the narrator or Mark says, no, this is her little daughter. Elsewhere, the only other place that word is used for little daughter is Jairus's daughter, who was 12 years old. So this is probably a pubescent or slightly prepubescent 12-year-old-ish. Okay. And then Jesus goes, is transfigured, comes down the mountain. There's a big debate. Some of the apostles are trying, or some of the disciples are trying to drive a demon out of a child, and they couldn't. And Jesus says to Father, how long has this been going on? And the Greek word is, the Father answers, paideothen. St. Jerome translates it ab infancia, since infancy. So the child has been afflicted by a demon since infancy. This goes all the way back to Deuteronomy. And when God says, I will punish the sins of the father in their children to those who hate me. And then he describes, this is giving of the law. God himself says this in giving the law. And the Hebrew is avon avat, the sins of the parents passed to the children. Now, in the developed tradition, it is debated in the early church, and it was with St. Augustine, the doctor of grace, battle with the Pelagians, that he really fleshed this out. That God, he says that this is a type of original sin. And the catechism says the original sin has two effects. There's the spiritual and the temporal. So even though, and you and I know this on a very basic level, that confession removes the spiritual effect of a sin, but the temporal punishment still remains. And so the mystery of a generational sin or a generational curse is that the punishment of the sin, the effect of the sin, can transmit into the subsequent generations. And in so doing, those four things, glorify God, punish the sinner, rebuke the sinner, or to punish sin, rebuke the sinner, and to teach us. And God in his mystery, his justice is not our justice. And St. Augustine argues this brilliantly in his debate with Julian of Aquino. And what he says is that the effect, it's similar to a blessing, a curse. And then in the developed tradition, we see original sin is not just a negative effect, like a disease passed on, but also a privation of grace. So man now lacks what the Virgin Mary holds in perfection as the God's exalted creature who is preserved from all stain of original sin. We still have concupiscence even after baptism. And so the temporal effect still remains in us. So that twofold effect continues. And so St. Augustine argues very eloquently for this, that this is a type of original sin. It's part of the effect is upon subsequent generations.
Thanks for that, Dan Schneider. Joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe, please go out and buy his book, The Liber Christo Method, a field manual for spiritual combat. That's available at Tan Books. And if you have to, you can get it on Amazon. Joe Resinello.
I want to expand on that a little bit, Dan. We spoke just for the audience's benefit ahead of time about that. Full disclosure, Joe and I are brother-in-laws. Our wives are Haitian-American, and their dad, who has passed, was involved in voodoo, and it has affected his children, particularly my wife. My wife's spiritual director is Father Glenn Sedano, who is the exorcist for New York City. You may know who he is. And she has been troubled throughout, you know, her life by some effects of her dad's, you know, dabbling. It's actually more than dabbling. But what Father Glenn said, and this is where I want you to go, and this kind of stems to what you guys do, order in the home. Her father had authority over my wife as the daughter, but now I'm married to her. I have authority, and I can help her. And when we would pray our family rosary, I would pray with my hand on her shoulder or on her head. Now, I don't have the hands of a priest. I can't bless someone like that. That is not within my wheelhouse. But as the head of household, and she is my wife, I have some authority over her, which means I can have authority over a demon that is bothering my children or my wife. Please talk about that, because this was something I did not know about. And I mean, I don't want to say I know a lot, but I've read some things. I don't have a PhD, but I was very ignorant of this. Father Glenn kind of got me up to speed. And it was efficacious. So please talk about that. I think it would be interesting for our listeners.
Yeah, you don't have some authority. You have authority. It's like a woman saying, I have some pregnancy in me. No, you're pregnant, you know? So you have authority. The demon's going to yield or not yield for three things. One, does this person have requisite authority or the person place of the object? Yes, check. Joe has authority over his wife by natural law. Number two, what is the state of merit or holiness, the state of grace? That's the depth of Joe's holiness. That's going to also determine. That's the plus P rounds. That's going to bring more impact. And finally, specifically, how are you praying? So you're praying specifically against breaking the effects of any generational curses. But you walk down that. That's the logic behind the rules of engagement. But it's not deterministic. So it isn't determined by that. I mean, it doesn't happen every time. Not every descendant of Freemasonry is going to have an effect. There's a pattern that will play out. There's a pattern that's going to play out on different sorts of generational curses. But when you think of a curse, again, going back to Augustine and his logic and battling against the Pelagians in the fourth and fifth century, a curse is a lack. What the family of Adam and Eve realize now is a privation of a good, a lack of a spiritual good befell upon all the human race through original sin. And so a curse is a privation of the protection of blessing. This is the language of St. Augustine, Doctor of the Church. And so there was a lack of the protection of blessing upon a family, particularly when the authority, the father in particular, when the parents, but particularly the father, commits certain grave acts and allows it in. Certain grave acts are going to have diabolic accompaniment, but it isn't that it's going to affect you. Oftentimes there's an appropriation. Normally, there'll be an appropriation by someone in the family. Someone in the family will commit a grave act, and they no longer have the protection of the state of grace. I have a friend who has got a degenerative eye disease. And I use this by way of analogy. I'm not saying his eye disease is a generational sin or a curse. He has a degenerative eye disease that passes through the females to every other male, and it's there's no cure for it yet. So this physical anomaly or vulnerability now passes in a certain specific way through the female to every other male. So his sons are fine, but any sons of his daughter have some percentage. I don't know what that percentage is. They have a vulnerability by nature because of this disorder that somehow has been introduced into the eyes in that construct of their family. So it's that's an analogy for a way it works in the spiritual. It doesn't mean that this group will be blind. They've got a 50% or 60% chance of being fine, but that vulnerability is present by nature. And so when that is introduced into the family structure, whether it's witchcraft or any form of witchcraft, that can create a vulnerability, a privation of blessing. And so how do you battle back? You battle back exactly what you're doing. You put the blessing in there. You fill the gap. You stand in the gap, in the breach as the head of household, and you start whittling away at it. And know that your vulnerabilities are going to be different than mine and different than Joe's. They're all going to, but we all have them. In the post-fall concupiscent state of mankind that we're in now. Does that make sense?
No, it is. It was interesting because I never thought of that in my life, to be honest with you. And to be honest with you, I was kind of insensitive to it, to my wife when she first brought it up. Like, I'm troubled by this. And I kind of like blew it off, but I shouldn't have. And when I did address it, things got better. And that was at the direction of Father Glenn. And frankly, it worked, you know, because now my wife's not bothered by it. But like, I learned something, to be honest with you. And to your point, I think men have to take that role. And I don't think a lot of people think in that way.
Witchcraft. I got a cousin of mine. When we were sitting around one time talking about barbecues, we were in his backyard. This is when I was still living in Jersey. And my wife just made a statement. Yeah, I'd like to lose a couple pounds. And somebody said, why don't you start doing yoga? I do yoga. It would be great for you. Your body does things that you can't imagine. All right. And all this. Oh, and my wife turned around very matter of factly and said, well, we can't do yoga because we're Catholic. There is yoga is not acceptable. Okay. And seriously taught. by the Catholic Church as not being acceptable, okay, because it involves Hindu spirituality and mysticism and all that kind of stuff. And one of my cousins looked at me and said, Joe, really? All right. And I said, yeah, really. Talk about that a little bit. Talk about these ways that people just think are innocuous. Well, they don't do any real harm. Well, no, they're an invitation, man. Whether it's Reiki, whether it's yoga, whether it's Ouija boards, there's truth there that needs to be addressed. I'd like to know what your thoughts are.
Yeah. I'll give you one experiential, and then I'll flesh it out. Worst case of possession I have yet to see in my 9 years of working cases. The worst case was a case of yoga. Usually, you see the entry point. One mortal sin is sufficient for possession. Okay, Father Ripperger says, based on other writers. Alphonsus, Liguori, et cetera, one mortal sin. But in my experience and kind of the general experience of those in the community that are working week in, week out with cases, there's usually a 1-2 punch, you know, the one punch knockout guys, there's a setup, you know. If you watched, was this Tyson Fury 2 fights ago before he retired, then he came back. He set a guy up with the uppercut that was heard around the world, right? He set him up and the announcers noticed it. Every time he threw this, he flinched, and the guy he was fighting, he would cover up, but he would leave his chin. Sure enough, in the fifth round, he flinched, and then he threw it and knocked the guy out instantly. So the 1-2, the setup is usually first commandment and sixth commandment. Sins against the first commandment, some kind of witchcraft, and then violations against the procreative act, sexual sin, basically. And so yoga... is any recourse, this is Father Gabriel Morth, any recourse at all, such as that, white magic, black magic, and yoga, is a recourse to Satan. Why? In Psalm 96:5, the gods of the Gentiles are demons. So when you're invoking through yoga in your bodily position, what do I do when, you know, you're probably be a Yankee fan, right? Guy walks up to the plate, he got a central thing of the bodily act. So the yoga positions, the various position of surrender, you can play the rosary in the background and you can have Gregorian chant going in the background, but those bodily positions evoke entities that are foreign and antithetical to the true and living God. You're invoking demons. And so this particular case that I had, the worst possible case, again, would her body would actually transform into the spirit, the bodily, the type of animal that she did the yoga for. It was bizarre to see, because the demon now takes that very seriously and possessed her body in such a way that it took total, complete control of her body, including a snake taking the form of a snake, right? So the yoga positions, you put your body in those positions, you're invoking entities external. So what's the difference between yoga or Reiki and pressure point or even massage, okay? Well, when the discerning line is, if you're invoking an entity or an energy, or to pull an energy into a chakra outside of the body into the body, it's not Christian. You're invoking something other than the true God. If you're drawing on the body's natural powers, then you're doing something that's very consistent with your nature, pressure point, massage, and these other things. Reiki specifically is invoking external energies. There's no secret about it. It's what they do. They might use pressure point, elbows, and other things, but they're using the same thing with reflexology. We had a lady came up and she was afflicted. She didn't know why, couldn't figure it out. So what do you do for a living? Well, I do reflexology, but I pray to Padre Pio and I pray for them while I'm doing it. Yes, but you're still invoking external energies. What are those external energies? Psalm 96:5, the gods of the demons, the Gentiles are demons. So that's kind of the way you can understand what is clean and not clean.
Thanks for that, Dan. Joe, we have time for one quick question and one quick answer, so I'll hand it over to you.
I heard something from the Knights of Columbus recently, and I liked it, and I don't want to steal it, but I'm going to steal it. I'm just giving them credit.
Go ahead.
Said, if we fix the man, we fix society. And this is something that you guys do. This is something Joe and I try to do. Priest, prophet, and king. That's what men have to be. We have to lead our families. That's the grassroots of the fix of America. Talk about that. Something that needs to be done. I think if we do that, we do fix our society.
Yeah, the great
Dan, just as a heads up, we got about 2 minutes, brother.
Right. The great Shema Yisrael, the Lord your God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, all your soul. Drill this into your children. Now, it isn't a mill. I hear the word drill, and I see a drill sergeant. That's not what he's talking. That's not what Moses is talking about. He's talking about constantly teach this, reform, change this. We have to realize that we are in survival, escape, resistance, and evasion right now. We have to know it. We're fighting behind enemy lines. We have to drill it into our children. We have to provide protection through prayers and praying together. Praying as a husband and wife, praying for your children, getting rid of the garbage out of your home, all things that are not Catholic, making your home a Catholic home, seeing, drilling it into their eyes, their senses, their through your speech, your visual, what you see. I've got Our Lady of Guadalupe here. I've got Divine Mercy. I've got four crucifixes. I've got Our Lady of Carmel giving out scapulars in purgatory. This is our home. Your home should be a Catholic home. So drilling it into the children, this is how we need to do that. Being other, no compromise. Remember the rule, no compromise. Returning with honor, that means no compromise of the gospel. In a loving way, proclaiming the gospel in your home and in through your home, whatever God has called you to do otherwise.
You reminded me of one time, Joe and I laugh about it all the time. The Father Carapi, when he was on the scene, he used to say, my mother, she had statues of Mary. She had crucifixes. She had holy water. Devil didn't stand a chance in my mother's house. You reminded me of that. Dan Schneider, your social media, what you got going on, the book one more time and where our folks can buy it.
Yeah, you can get the book through 10books.com. You can pre-order it there. It'll be back in a few weeks, or you can go to Amazon and get it right away. We've got a big spiritual warfare coming up at the end of the month, end of next month, with Father Ripperger, Kyle Clement, and Jesse Romero, me in Austin, Texas. I'll be in Louisiana next weekend. You can contact and reach the people at LibreCristo.org. If you need to get a hold of me or request me to come speak at your parish, buy the book, get holy, or die trying, as Jesse says. I'll steal it from him.
There you go, brother. There you go. Yeah. Dan Schneider, thanks for joining us here at the Frontline with Joe and Joe. This has been a great conversation. Joe and I have been edified. I'm sure our audience has too. I know I don't have to tell you this, but I will anyway. You are welcome back here anytime, brother.
Anytime you call me, I'll be there, man. I appreciate it. I love you guys.
Well, awesome. Well, that's great to know. We love you too, Dan. And thank you all out there for joining us at the Veritas Catholic Radio Network, 1350 on your AM dial, 103.9 on your FM dial, spreading the truth of the Catholic faith to the New York City metropolitan area. Download the app, share it with your friends. You'll have access to all of our station's content, not just the Frontline with Joe and Joe. And if you like what Joe and I do, we have our political, social, and cultural commentary, along with all these interviews, on YouTube, Facebook, Rumble, Twitter, so you can, anywhere you see us, please help us out. Hit a subscribe, hit a share, especially if you like what we're doing. And thank you again. And remember, until the next time, that our conversation is your conversation, and that conversation is going on everywhere. We'll talk to you soon.